Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to Real Life for a Crime Daily for Wednesday, March 29th, and I'm Jim Chapman.
I'm Woody Overton.
And I'm Mike Agavino. Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Morning.
Never let it be said that Agavino does not pay off his bets. Those of you who have given me shit online can now take back all those bad things you've said because Woody Overton has been compensated.
Yes, and it's much appreciated, and I understand that Drizzly.com delivered that to you.
That was a Drizzly delivery to New Orleans.
And so I got a case of Shiner Bock, and nothing's finer than an icy cold Shiner. I appreciate it, and y'all look on our social media for the pictures of that today.
I expect to be offered several of those, by the way.
You're offered all you want.
Okay, thank you.
But y'all, unfortunately, not unfortunately, we like to joke and have a good time with a lot of these stories and stuff. But today, we're coming to you with a heavy heart. A couple of tragedies we're going to start out with. And the first one is out of Baton Rouge. And our hearts absolutely go out to the families. So I'm going to skip around a little bit, so just bear with me, okay? But two pilots were killed when a police helicopter crashed into a cane field in rural West Baton Rouge Parish. And y'all, the pilots were for Baton Rouge City Police Department. And I actually had a Baton Rouge City police officer fishing in my pond. And when he got before it got released in the media, and he called me at the house and said, "Hey, we got two dead." And he said the helicopter pilots, and I automatically knew who one of them was going to be. So I want to talk about this for a minute and then we'll get into the meat of the story. So it says Baton Rouge Police Officer Sergeant David Poirier, 47 years old, and Corporal Scotty Canizero, 38, died in a helicopter crash Sunday morning in the Port Allen area. Now, y'all, let me tell you about these. I met Scotty Canizero, but I didn't know him like I knew David Poirier. David Poirier, before he went to Baton Rouge City, and all he ever wanted to do was be a helicopter pilot. Before he did that, he even worked for the Livingston Parish Sheriff's Office and Denham Springs City Police Department. Great guy, a fine, outstanding career law enforcement officer who ultimately gave his life in the service of all of us, right? And as well as Corporal Scotty Canizero. But it's horrible and sad, and I'm going to read you some stuff, and I'm sure y'all know most of it, but it's just important that we touch on it, okay? And says an initial report sent to the Federal Aviation Administration preliminary said that the helicopter appeared to have struck a tree before it went down. The helicopter took off from Baton Rouge Metro Airport at 2:26 a.m. and crashed in a field nearly 3 miles away from the Omni Airport. The helicopter was found around 11:30 a.m. after the pilots did not come home from work. There were no severe weather factors at the time. The FAA and their investigators will be leading this investigative process. At the time, y'all, when they crashed, they were actually involved in the pursuit of a vehicle. And I'm going to tell you more about this guy and what happened in a minute. But right after it happened, Chief Murphy Paul, the Baton Rouge City Police Chief, who I worked directly with at State Police for many years, he came out and made this statement. We're going to play a clip for you now.
Today is a a very emotional day for the men and women of the Baton Rouge Police Department and all those in our law enforcement community. Right now, we're asking the community to lift our officers up in prayer, to lift the family members of the two heroes who we lost today.
Y'all, and immediately after he got done speaking, Mayor Broome issued the following statement. She said, on behalf of the city of Baton Rouge, I extend my deepest condolences to the families and colleagues of the Baton Rouge Police Department officers who tragically lost their lives today in a helicopter crash. These officers served our community with distinction and bravery, and we will be forever grateful for their service and sacrifice. We are working closely with the Baton Rouge Police Department to offer support for their investigation into the cause of this tragedy and to provide support to the families and colleagues of the fallen officers. We ask the community to keep the families of the fallen officers in their thoughts and prayers, and we express our heartfelt gratitude to all the first responder and agencies who have been working tirelessly to support our city during this difficult time. Y'all, it's a horrible day, and I experienced too many of them over the years when a police officer dies, okay? And just at a loss for words. It affects so many people on so many levels, certainly directly their family members, but then you have all the everybody that loved them that's affected. And then on top of that, when they say, the blue line and all that, it truly, law enforcement truly is a brotherhood and a sisterhood. When you put your lives in each other's hands every day, is a bond like being in a foxhole during war is the only thing I could correlate it to. And so it's just heartbreaking.
There's a lot of unanswered questions too that, the obvious right off the bat is the time frame.
Yeah.
And how do you lose track of a helicopter? And, yeah. So out of respect for, these fallen officers, of course, we're going to, I guess, wait till more information gets released on before we,
yeah,
and we really dive too deep into
that. And we know a lot already, but like you said, out of respect, let's honor them now, and certainly the funerals and everything are going to be coming up, and we'll bring you more on it. But I'm gonna tell you what ultimately led to this. There was a vehicle pursuit, y'all, another vehicle pursuit. Remember we told you about the ones where the teenagers got killed? The vehicle pursuit started in East Baton Rouge and went across the bridge into West Baton Rouge. Well, happened again. A 23-year-old man has been arrested and charged with two counts of manslaughter. DeAndre Dwayne Besse of Baton Rouge was arrested after the deadly Baton Rouge City Police Department helicopter crash that killed two officers, Sergeant David Poirier, 47, and Corporal Scotty Canizero, 38. On Sunday, March 26th, around 2:27 a.m., Baton Rouge Police Department was in pursuit of a 2014 Ford Mustang that had crossed into the West Baton Rouge Parish on I-10. The vehicle exited I-10 onto LA 415, and Besse continued fleeing Baton Rouge City Police Department with reported speeds at or near 135 miles an hour. Air One was assisting, y'all. That's the helicopter that David and Scotty were flying. Air One was assisting in trying to follow the Mustang. Around 2:35 a.m., the pursuit was terminated near the intersection of U.S. Highway 190 and Boucher Road by BRPD. West Baton Rouge Sheriff's Office was not in pursuit of this vehicle, but was responding to the area at the time the pursuit was terminated by BRPD. Approximately 3:14 a.m., West Baton Rouge Sheriff's Office was dispatched to a home on Porges Bayou Drive in reference to a reported abandoned vehicle. The vehicle was later confirmed to be the 2014 Ford Mustang that had fled Baton Rouge Police Department earlier that night. West Baton Rouge Sheriff's Office says Besse contacted the the property owner and ask if he could get a ride to nearby a gas station because his car ran out of gas. After getting dropped off by the property owner, Bessay phoned a friend in Baton Rouge who picked him up and took him to his home in Baton Rouge. Nearly 8 hours after the wreckage, Sergeant Poirier's father pinged his phone. When the phone showed up in the cane field, the dad went to the location but could not get to the crash site. That's when Sergeant Poirier's dad called West Baton Rouge Sheriff's Office around 10:48 a.m. requesting deputies to respond. That's when deputies found a Baton Rouge Police Department helicopter that had crashed. Both officers on board the helicopter died from their injuries. After deputies discovered the crash and fatalities, warrants were drawn up for Bessay's arrest. Bessay was arrested by the U.S. Marshal Task Force. Bessay has been charged with, again, two counts of felony manslaughter, one count of aggravated flight from an officer, and one count of felony aggravated obstruction of a highway of commerce. Upon Bessay's release from West Baton Rouge, he'll be booked in the East Baton Rouge Parish Prison on the following charges: aggravated flight and an officer and hit and run.
So some interesting information there, and I would imagine, Woody, that people are going to have a few questions. For example, he's charged with two counts of manslaughter, which obviously, if this guy ain't fleeing, none of this happens.
Right. Manslaughter under Louisiana law is defined when you show such lack of care that a reasonable person should have shown or would have shown, and you cause someone's death. And so that's it. They would not have been up pursuing this guy had he not been running. So ultimately, it's a trickle-down effect. He catches the charges for manslaughter, and he deserves them.
So at a point, the ground pursuit was stopped?
Yes. Remember I told y'all before, that's a supervisor's decision. You're supposed to call in your location and the speeds. And I imagine when it was stopped on our side of the river. And I imagine when they reached a certain point, they're like, supervisor's like, it's not worth it. He's running 135 miles an hour. Let him go. Now, back in the day, and I don't know why they changed it. I guess they must have gotten in trouble. But I specifically remember Mike Kaz, who's still the sheriff, is going out this term. But anytime we had a pursuit that started in Livingston, went through East Baton Rouge, and ultimately, we knew they were on the interstate headed towards West Baton Rouge, West Baton Rouge used to block off the Mississippi River Bridge, and they would shoot them. His policy was, no pursuits coming into my parish. You shoot them. Shoot up the vehicle. Do what you have to do to stop it. But obviously, then they don't do that anymore for whatever reason. And on top of that, West Baton Rouge Sheriff's Office didn't even have anybody close enough to see the vehicle or get into the pursuit.
Right, and probably the recent case might have had an impact on there. Now, if you're in a police vehicle involved in a chase, and there's aerial support, you're aware of that, right? You're conversing folks in the helicopter normally?
You could be, I'm speculating, but I don't believe that they even saw the vehicle. They were up for less than 12 minutes. They would have had to find the vehicle, et cetera. It's been terminated. It's not like they have a unit right behind them saying, hey, we're on such road, so they can get above them. I believe they were trying to get in the area and perhaps pick up the vehicle. They knew it was a Mustang and all that, because they had pursued them for some distance before they terminated the pursuit. The main thing of it is, we'll bring y'all more on, because I'm sure a lot more is going to come out of it, but today's not the day to throw shade on departments or whatever. All those brothers and sisters are hurting, and I don't mean just biological. I mean the ones in blue. Horrible. And Poirier, like I said, Canizero, I may have met him. David Poirier, just one of the finest people you can meet. and a true law enforcement professional. I think both of them last year won Officer of the Month. So, I mean, at the same time. And, like, don't be misled when they say 17-year veteran like Poirier and a 16-year veteran Cannizzaro. I can assure you they both have much longer police careers than that and ended up ultimately transferring to BRPD for the chance to be a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
So my hearts go out to y'all. Rest in peace, brothers.
So we're going to move on to some more disturbing news, this on the national front, and that is a shooting that has taken place at a Tennessee private Christian school that left three students and three adults dead on Monday. The shooter was killed by police. Now, the victims were killed in an attack at the Covenant School. Officers engaged with and killed the shooter, identified as a 28-year-old female who was carrying two assault-type rifles and a handgun. The female was killed by police at around 10:30 a.m. local time. At one point, she was a student at that school. There was a vehicle nearby that gave the police kind of a clue of who she was. And police said the shooter entered the building through a side door before climbing stairs onto the second floor where she opened fire. They don't believe that she was wearing any body armor. Three young students were transported to the Monroe Carroll Jr. Children's Hospital at Vanderbilt with gunshot wounds. All three were pronounced dead upon arrival, and three more adults were also pronounced dead. All three of those adults were staff working at the school. The Covenant School, as we mentioned, is a private Christian institution for students up to sixth grade. And these were 9-year-olds. All three of these children were 9 years old, sadly.
It's just unreal, you know, and just seems commonplace now, although being a female is not as common as male, right? Mike, I think you said there's only been
three or four.
Right. But the fact that she was armed, she carried in two assault rifles, whether they were AR-15s or AKs, we don't know. But she carried in two and a pistol and went in there to slaughter innocent babies and innocent adults, and it's horrible. Hats off to the two heroes that responded. It was two deputies that responded to the active shooter call, and I can remember when we did our first training way back in when after Sandy Hook is the name of the school. Yeah, after Sandy Hook, we changed our policy from surrounding the building and doing standoffs to if you have an active shooter, you go in to the sound of the gunshots and you eliminate the threat. And they did that with this piece of shit who murdered all these innocent people. And I mean, you know, an adult being murdered is one thing, but when you get 3 9-year-olds who have their families and brothers and sisters, and you know, you send your kids to school thinking they're going to school, and then they're murdered.
Yeah, so there was a press conference, and at that press conference, John Drake, who is the Nashville police chief, made a statement, and we're going to play the clip, and then we're going to talk about it. So here's that clip right here.
Our investigations tell us that she was a former student at the school. I don't know what grade she's attended or grades, but we do firmly believe she was a student there.
Did she identify as transgender?
She does identify as transgender, yes.
Is there any reason to believe the shooter first went to the church before going to the school?
I can't give you that information. Should we know that the minute the calls came in, we responded to the church?
Is there any reason to believe that how she identifies has any motive for targeting the school?
We can give you that at a later time. There is some theory to that. We're investigating all the leads, and once we know exactly, we'll let you know.
So was this a targeted attack?
It was.
Now, you heard in that clip that the shooter, which was a white 28-year-old Nashville woman, actually identified as a man and was considered transgender. She was engaged by police 14 minutes after the first call was made to police. And as you also heard in the clip, Police Chief John Drake said the shooting was a targeted attack. So on Monday afternoon, the FBI searches the home of the female shooter, and they find a manifesto along with maps of the school drawn in detail, and points of entry were highlighted on these maps. Now, to tell you how the officers actually took this female down, they entered the first story of the school. They started clearing it. They heard shots coming from the second story, and they went towards the gunfire.
Right.
When the officers got to the second level, they saw the shooter, and they engaged her, and she was fatally shot by the responding officer. So, first of all, hats off to these brave officers that probably avoided most likely was a lot worse situation. It was already bad enough with six dead, but certainly could have been a lot worse, and just a horrible, horrible situation coming out of Nashville.
Yeah, and y'all, they've adapted the training for these active shooter scenarios, and I'm talking 20 years ago, I guess, when we started it. But there's a lot of things and safety measures in place that teachers are trained on now that when you hear gunshot, and I'm not going to tell you what they are, but there's things that officers look for when they respond. But I remember doing the training, and I think it was one of these elementary schools. It was summertime and being out, and we had what they call simunitions, which is like you're shooting real bullets, but it's not – a lead bullet, if you get hit, it hurts like hell. But, you know, going in there and not knowing who's who and having you know you're charging someone who is actively killing other people, and it's you got to kill them or they're going to kill you.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, it's becoming, you know, a little bit of a problem. And you talk about these officers that went in there, they went towards the gunfire. Just last week, Kelly Jennings, who's been on Real Life Real Crime and Bloody and Gold and all that, did an interview with a guy named Max Schachner, and his son was killed in the Florida Parkland school shooting. And he has become a huge advocate for safety in schools, which they're finding holes and issues with. The SRO in that situation is known as the Coward of Broward.
School resource officer, y'all, if you don't know.
Yeah, and this SRO actually was hiding behind a wall. It's on video the entire time that this 17-year-old piece of crap was killing 14 kids, I believe it was.
Right.
And he's hiding behind a wall. Yeah. So that's the difference in folks going towards gunfire and folks shying away from it.
Yeah. So,
so shout out to those guys.
Absolutely. And it's not too long ago that we were all watching the news coverage of what happened in Uvalde, Texas. And we know the actions of both school officials and other law enforcement there, and the delays in their actions presumably cost some people their lives. In this particular case, number one, I believe she shot her way into that door. That door was locked.
Right.
And so this school was secure. It's that she was able to shoot her way in through that door. But for them to get to her quickly enough to, you know, I mean, no number of deaths is acceptable, but they prevented a lot of additional deaths from happening, and certainly what her plans were. But when this first came across my phone, I saw the name Catherine Coons, and I saw her age, 60, and as we've from time to time discussed on this show, I'm 60, and I went to Vanderbilt, and there was a girl that I knew a little bit at Vanderbilt by the name of Catherine Coons. And so I went, oh, man, there's a good chance. And so I immediately went onto Facebook, and then I immediately went on to a Vandy chat that I'm a part of. And then a minute later, something came out from the chancellor of Vanderbilt acknowledging that it was her, and she was the head of school. She'd become a doctor, you know, gotten her PhD, and that hits close to home that way as well. And this is, you know, a really, really nice part of Nashville, an area known as Green Hills, and a school with, you know, a very, very strong reputation. The shooter had attended the school. You know, we'll find out more, but the fact that they had attended the school, that the police have said this was targeted, and the fact that the head of school was killed sort of makes me, you know, believe that that when they say targeted, that she was likely a target. And so we'll learn what we learn, obviously, over the next few days. But she also had legally purchased, I believe, the rifles, and there was a third gun, a handgun she had, that it was not for certain whether she had that one legally or not.
If you guys they'll find it all out.
Have heard that, but
let me tell you, the smallest magazine at one of the assault rifles would have been 40 rounds, so that's 80. If assuming that she didn't have more, and then probably 16 for the pistol, so she could have killed everybody in the building and had those guys not stopped her. And it's just horrible for the families and your friend and everybody. And it's just crazy.
Yeah, what that tells me when you have two rifles and a pistol is that your intention was to kill a heck of a lot more people than you were able to kill.
Right.
So, awful.
9-year-olds.
Yeah. I don't know.
Okay. Let's move on, guys. There's an unbelievable story that broke yesterday, and we're gonna bring it to you as it was laid out, actually, on Facebook Live. This is, I don't know if this has ever happened before, but this is a situation where someone was actually on Facebook Live, and over the next 10 minutes or so while they were on Facebook Live, some incredible events unfolded, all of which were caught on audio and much of which was caught on video. So let me tell you about this event. This happened in Lowndes County, Georgia. The people involved were 28-year-old Khadijah Brown, her husband, 28-year-old Jeremy Brown, and Khadijah's mother was over at their apartment cooking dinner. Now, there are four children. Those children were not part of the video through the early parts of the video. It's not clear where they were, whether they were in another room, whether they were outside. Somehow this is an apartment, so I think they were probably in another room, but the children don't emerge until the end. And so as we start watching the Facebook Live, you have Jeremy is not home. So the only people there are Khadija and her mother, and they are – her mother's cooking in the kitchen. She never fully appears on camera. You see her from a distance, but it's never clear. And, you know, they're talking about their situation. They're talking about Jeremy, Khadija's husband, and a lot of the things that he is not doing that Khadija's unhappy about. And it's clear the women are, you know, sort of simmering and ready to, you know, give Jeremy a little bit of a hard time when he arrives. And so I'm going to play a clip for you that is the first minute and a half or so of Jeremy's arrival back at the apartment and what happens.
You know, people want to have something to say, but he ain't here with his kids. He ain't helping. He left at 6:00. He left at 6:06 to go be with his mama.
Why is there gotta be a question about do I need to cook for the kids?
He don't never have to question everybody's loyalty, but where is his loyalty at?
I ain't spend no damn loyalty.
He wanna talk about me when I'm not doing. Talk about unnecessary. Then he talking about calling the police. Talk about I'm gonna get my stuff. But you got four kids and a wife. It's 7:36. He can't even be.
He can't even come here and cook for the kids.
He
got to be at work at 8:00.
Nah, matter of fact, he got to be at work at 9:00.
Okay, but well, he still got time to cook for these kids.
And then he got to go pick up his. He got to go pick up his buddy from his job. Law.
Well, he need to tell Law. He need to find get his mama car and go to work.
He pick up his brother-in-law, take him to work back and forth every day.
But
he can't put gas in both cars.
What I'm saying, if Law ain't giving him no gas money to go to work, talking about people got stuff. Okay, you wanna put it like that? Okay, I got stuff to do too.
So you can tell that you know they are not happy with Jeremy that. Things were said by Khadija's mom, like, you know, he's not here with his kids. He always questions everyone's loyalty. He can't even come here to cook for his kids. He can't put gas in his car. Khadija's mom's annoyed and says, you know, I've got stuff to do too, rather than having to be here cooking for his kids. And, there's a lot of dissatisfaction expressed between the women, and then Jeremy arrives. But when he arrives, he's on the phone with someone as he walks in, and so he's not really engaging with them in the first few moments when he gets in. It's what happens after he gets off the phone, and here's the next 2.5 minutes or so of what transpires.
I'm over here. I got stuff to do too. I'm over here.
What you on the phone with?
Uncle, boom. I'm talking
about uncle. I'm
over here. No, you ain't trying to get ready for work. Look at him. This is sad case, y'all. He getting his stuff. Look at that, sad face as a father.
Hey, Jeremy, what is the conversation you want to have?
We good.
Yeah, and your baby in the room?
What is the conversation
you want to have? We good. Give me my phone, bro. Don't show
me. What is the conversation you want to have?
What's the conversation?
Get out my phone.
He said, what's the conversation?
Don't touch me. I'll call the police over. Don't touch me.
He said, what's the conversation y'all want to have? What's the conversation you want to have?
I'm still asking what is the conversation.
You want to go tell your family about this and about that. You want to do this.
I'm trying to leave from over here and pee, man. I ain't trying to argue at all.
I'm going to take my car key off.
Get my
key. Stop.
What is the conversation?
No, what's the conversation?
Keep your hands on. Don't touch me, bro.
What's the conversation?
Move, bro. I'm trying to get ready for work, man. Go on.
How you getting ready for work?
What is going on? That's all I'm here. I'm over here doing. Talking about I don't do nothing for the kids. I don't do nothing. I do what I can when I can. But like I said, don't keep putting me in situations that's not my problem. And then, like I said, this is your family. You supposed to be here. Yeah, I've been taking care of these kids.
You're not good because you're not here taking care of these kids. He wanna go
talk to
everybody.
Keep your hands on me. Don't touch me again.
Touch you.
Jason, sit down over here. We'll make it easy. Sit down over here. I'm gonna do it just like this. Sit down over here.
Ain't nobody finna come over here and do nothing.
Get your hands on me, bro. Stop touching me. Move.
Need to stop.
Sit down over here, Jason.
So as you heard, Khadijah wanted to know who Jeremy was on the phone with. Then she refers to him as a sad case as he's, getting ready to go to work. Khadijah and her mother question Jeremy about a, quote, conversation he supposedly wants to have. So I guess there's some large discussion between the three of them that has been – that they've been building toward, but that hasn't been had. Khadijah is touching Jeremy, and it's clear that there's – while the two are married, there's presently – difficulties, there's animosity, and Jeremy does not want to be touched by Khadijah. He says to her mother, tell your daughter to keep her hands off of me. I'm not trying to argue. I'm just trying to get ready for work. So he's taking a pretty passive approach in the once the conversation starts. And you know, Khadijah's mom says, don't keep putting me in this situation. I'm over here doing for the kids. This is your family. You're supposed to be over here helping. So it's really a two against one discussion with both of the women giving Jeremy a good lashing about his participation as a father and helping around the house. Jeremy is asking Khadijah not to touch him, and you hear something that sounds like a slap in the video. So I believe at some point she slaps him, and then he says, don't touch me, and she says, touching. So it's almost like it's, you know, don't touch me, and then she puts a finger on him, and don't touch me, and she puts a finger on him. So it's kind of like she's trying to be cute with the, you're telling me not to touch you and I'm touching you. And then the screen goes black. So the phone is obviously fallen from her hand, and we can hear the two beginning to tussle. The voices get louder and everything intensifies, and you may not want to listen to this next clip. This next clip is what transpires over the next minute and a half from the point of the beginning of the tussle. And you might want to skip forward if you prefer not hearing it. It's not for everyone, but here's what it sounded like.
Ain't nobody coming over
here. Oh, sit down. Get your motherfucking hands on me, bro. Stop touching me, bro.
Stop.
Don't touch me again.
Ain't nobody finna do nothing.
Open this hall. Open this hall. ass. Motherfucker gonna put keep her hands on you.
I kill your ass, not a bitch. Stop. Nobody, I can get out my bed for this.
Man, people so stupid, man. Girl, I lose my shoes on me.
Oh, you ain't getting nothing. Everything in the top belongs to me. Stop. Get somewhere and sit down. Y'all gonna have to start. Stop all this. Because then y'all wonder why the kids.
So, as you heard, as we heard, the argument escalated. I counted Khadija's mother say the word stop at least 15 times during that period. But things just kept going until, you heard it, tragedy struck. We're not going to play the remainder of the clip. I believe it is still up on Facebook, but the very end, the children come into the room and discover their father and what has happened. And those screams that the children let out are just are bone chilling. As are the screams from Khadija and her mother when the gun goes off and. It's obvious that Jeremy is dead. But in that moment, all right, guys, we've never had an intervention on the show, but we're going to have one right now. And this applies to both of you guys, but perhaps a bit more to Mr. Overton.
Must be alcohol.
Well, you know, neither of you guys are 25 anymore. And sometimes you need to take a break away from the alcohol.
Oh, Lord.
So I want to talk to you about a healthy alternative to alcohol that can be just the right fix after a stressful day. You know, Woody, like a day after 10 crazies from Wisconsin come into town to kill 1,000 wild boars and you idiots end up killing 1,000 Shinerbocks at the same time.
That's going to happen.
Well, I know it is. And so I want to tell you about a product called Recess Mood. Think about it. Even the name sounds relaxing. Recess Mood is a delicious sparkling water infused with functional ingredients like mood-lifting magnesium and stress-balancing adaptogens, so you can relax without the alcohol or the hangover. Now, while Jim is looking up the meaning of adaptogens, I'll continue on. Real Life Real Crime and The Daily Show listeners get 15% off the Recess Mood Sampler Pack at takearecess.com/RLRC. That's takearecess.com/RLRC. You can enjoy Recess Mood after a busy day or whatever you need to relax and unwind. Recess Mood is made with real fruit and comes in four delicious flavors like strawberry rose and raspberry lemon. Those sound yummy.
Yeah.
It's only got 20 calories, doesn't have any sugar in it. So I don't know if you've ever had guilt, Woody. But if you do, Recess Mood could help you get rid of it.
Yeah, but I've had the pain of not having a recess.
Okay, well, you deserve a healthier way to unwind. Head to takearecess.com/RLRC and get 15% off a Recess Mood sampler pack. It's your go-to alcohol replacement. Do you guys know what May 12th is? Sunday, May 12th?
Mama's Day.
That would be correct. It's Mother's Day. So let me ask you, do you basically get your mom the same gift every year for Mother's Day, maybe some flowers, some chocolates, maybe a robe or a framed photo, right? Boring stuff, right?
Right.
Well, let me tell you about something that's totally cool and different from Mother's Day that will never wilt, spoil, or put an extra 10 pounds around her waist. I'm talking about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty unique. Cool, right?
Right.
Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you wish to ask. Your mom can either type a response to the email, or she can record her voice if she prefers to do that, or she can do both. And MyLifeInABook.com then compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book, as well as an audiobook. And if you want, and she's up to the task technically, you know, the audiobook is a great extra thing to be able to do. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy, something you and your future generations can treasure. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is kind of your chance to give her a way to share them. Every family's a little bit different, and in my family, we love to give each other a really hard time. So I've taken the approach in doing this of asking my mom to comment on some of those family moments that might be a bit embarrassing to other family members. Last week, my question was, Mom, did you feel guilty that day you hit me over the head with your wooden clog and Dad had to take me to the hospital for 8 stitches? Mom's response, back in the day, I was the disciplinarian of the house. And when you were 8 years old, you refused to get out of Nancy's, that's my sister's, plastic kiddie pool. I told you 10 times to get out of the damn pool. You didn't listen, so I chased you around the yard. And when you slipped, I nailed you right on the head. That was the last time you got in that kiddie pool. Of course, Dad had to lie to the ER and tell him that you fell on your head, but I nailed you good. The entire process with My Life in a Book is simple, and in the end, Mom will have a great keepsake that can remain in your family for generations.
Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code RLRC at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code RLRC for 10% off today.
Only words Khadija could seem to find is, I'm going to go to jail. Is what she said.
That's crazy.
So, according to Lowndes County Sheriff's Office, 28-year-old Khadija Michelle Brown was arrested without incident. This all happened on Saturday, by the way, after they responded to a domestic violence call. The statement said that Brown was charged with murder for fatally shooting Jeremy Brown. According to the county coroner, his name is Greg Merchant, they confirmed Jeremy was Khadija's husband. The statement detailed that Jeremy and Khadija were allegedly engaged in a domestic dispute inside their home that became physical. I think we can all acknowledge that from what we've heard. The sheriff acknowledged that the entire dispute was streamed on Facebook Live. The phone had been thrown down, and then you heard the shot, Sheriff Hawkins said, per the dispatch. Jeremy was declared dead at the scene, where a 9mm handgun and other suspected evidence was found, according to authorities. Khadija is being detained at the Lowndes County Adult Detention Center, where she awaits her initial court appearance. As of now, there's not been any bond set. There was a history of domestic violence between the two, but obviously, it went to a whole nother level, and we have yet another tragic and senseless death. I don't know if somebody used the word murder. It's an argument that got crazy at some point, and it's unclear where the gun came from, how the gun comes out. It obviously was never pointed in a threatening way, you know, stop, get out of here, or I'll shoot, you know, nothing like that happened somehow in the tussle. There was a gun involved and the trigger went off, and unfortunately 4 children are without a dad this morning.
Triggers don't go off. The trigger was pulled. And I mean, we'll find out more as it comes out, but domestic violence calls are the most dangerous calls that police officers get killed every year responding to domestic violence calls and all the other calls put together. And I've been on 1,000 of them, and I used to tell them, first of all, somebody had to leave or they were leaving with me. But secondly, I would tell them, and males too, and male and female, it was a repeated cycle. And said, one day I'm going to come out here and you're going to be dead.
Yeah. Well, it sure seemed like history was in this particular case, Jeremy was trying to de-escalate what was going on there.
Right.
The mother-in-law was unfortunately, while she did say, she did yell stop the 15 times for the whole front end of this thing.
Right.
I mean, she was adding fuel to the fire and instigating this. So,
well, it's another tragedy.
Yeah, it's a good example of, you know, I don't think anybody intended for that to happen. That's a good example of how a situation can get out of control real fast if cooler heads don't prevail. And and something horrible that neither one of those people planned on happening happened.
Well, and I agree with you on everything except for the planning part. It's called a specific intent. And the deal being is, if a mosquito lands on my arm right now, it just that fast, I'm like, it's biting me. I look down and realize it's biting me, and I slap it. Before I slapped it, I had specific intent. That's how fast it is. I would believe if it comes out, and we'll wait and see. If it comes out, if she pulled the pistol at any point, pistols don't go off by themselves.
But the reaction, the spontaneous reaction of the screaming, and yeah. I mean, it sure sounds like an accident.
There are no accidents for firearms. Somebody had to pull the trigger. And why Brandt break out a firearm anyway? Yeah. Deal is, if you break out a firearm and I'm trying to disarm you and take it away from you and you shoot me, it's still murder.
Yeah, well, we don't know. I mean, could have been in his pocket, not her. I mean, all you hear is them tussling, right? So,
well, what if a frog's ass was glass and it broke every time it jumped, right? We'll find out. It could have been.
I needed that. I needed that.
It could have magically fell from the sky and hit somebody in the head and their eyelash pulled the trigger. I mean, whatever. The common sense is going to, but we'll wait and see. We'll keep you all updated.
All right. So we're going to move on to a story that has garnered a lot of attention. I can actually remember when this situation first happened, and now they have a sentencing in place for Aiden Fucci, who is a Florida teenager sentenced just this week to life in prison for fatally stabbing 13-year-old Tristan Bailey more than 100 times in 2021. Now, just before his trial was set to begin in February, the 16-year-old pled guilty to first-degree murder for stabbing Tristan when he was 14 and leaving her body in the woods at the end of a cul-de-sac near her house, and that was on Mother's Day. Fucci received the maximum sentence for murdering the young cheerleader, which Tristan's family had stressed in court that they wanted. Aiden Fucci made a heinous decision on May 9th, 2021, and took the very life that I brought into this world, Tristan's mother was quoted as saying. Please do not think for one second that he could be rehabilitated at any point. He is beyond savings. Now, since Aiden is a juvenile, he was not eligible for the death penalty, and he is eligible to have his case reviewed after 25 years, allowing a judge at that time to consider a lesser sentence. Tristan was found dead on May 9th, 2021, after her parents reported her missing, and she had been stabbed 114 times, y'all. When Fucci was arrested on May 10th, 2021, he posted a selfie on social media of him in the back of a patrol car giving the peace sign, the Woody Everton peace sign.
That's crazy.
With the caption, "Hey guys, has anyone seen Tristan lately?" Wow.
This dude's not going to live.
He subsequently made several admissions of guilt, and authorities said they believe his clothing stained with blood, as well as a hunting knife believed to be the murder weapon, were in a nearby pond. Now, days before Tristan's killing, Fucci told his girlfriend that he planned on killing someone, though he didn't specify who it was going to be. Why his girlfriend at that point didn't tell her parents that, I don't know. I'm sure she thought he was just talking shit.
Right.
He said it would be at night. He would drag someone into the woods, and he would stab them, and it would happen within a month. He said he would act innocent, keep killing, and run away. Told all that to his girlfriend. Now, Fucci's attorneys said he has suffered from mental illness issues. And, of course, attorneys are going to say that every time someone kills somebody. During a pretrial conference via video, Fucci was heard talking about demons, saying, "Please don't let the demons take my soul. The demons are going to take my soul away."
Whatever.
Fucci then asks, "What's going on?" And then says, "Why am I here? I just want to talk to my mom and dad. What's going on?"
Yeah, but you can post it on Facebook, right?
Right. In a letter to the court, Fucci did apologize to Tristan's family, saying, "I'm sorry for all the pain I caused the Bailey family. I'm sorry to the friends, brothers, sisters, mom, dad, and any relatives. I'm sorry you didn't get to know her that long. You did not have long relationships with her. And for that, I'm sorry."
He's sorry he got caught. That's the only thing he's sorry for.
Fucci's grandmother asked the judge not to sentence him to life in prison, saying, "Please don't take him out of our lives forever. I know there's some good in Aiden." And what do you say it all the time? Even in the worst of people, they have somebody that loves them.
Generally, right.
So Fucci's mother, Crystal Smith, also sent a letter asking for a lighter sentence, saying he is not beyond saving. But she is also charged in the case, and this is where it gets real interesting. Crystal Smith is actually charged with tampering with evidence in her son's murder case. She allegedly washed blood off her son's jeans, and she's got a trial scheduled to start in April. Authorities say they found his clothing stained with blood, as well as a hunting knife, which they believe to be a murder weapon, in a nearby pond. And the knife was missing a tip, which authorities say was found in Tristan's body.
I'll tell you something. All the murders, stabbings I've worked over all the years, 100 and something is the most that I've ever heard of.
Yeah.
I think the biggest one I ever had was 57 stab wounds.
Yeah. And it also, I mean, she put up a fight.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about a heart, because they said something like 40 of those wounds were identified as defensive
wounds. Right.
So this guy more, just kept swinging at her and swinging at her and swinging
horrible.
At her.
Yeah. Usually the defensive wounds, to your hands and cutting your fingers off is horrible.
Yeah. And
baby girl.
And then his mother, basically trying to cover this up.
Yeah, she's going to get hers too.
They also obtained a surveillance video from the home, which reportedly shows the mother going to her son's bedroom after he was taken to the sheriff's office. In that video, she is seen retrieving a pair of blue jeans, washing them in a nearby bathroom, and then returning the pants to her own bedroom. The Smith was also seen with another witness inspecting jeans several times before returning the clothing to her son's bedroom. Mm-hmm. So she was going through everything. And the sheriff says Crystal Smith will be held responsible for a role in the case, and justice will be served.
And she could be one of the dumbest criminals too, right? How the hell do you not erase your own home surveillance system when you're getting rid of evidence?
Right. Fucci is being held without bond at an undisclosed adult prison facility in Florida, but he is being kept separate from other inmates.
Yeah, because they'll have a time with him for sure, right? And horrible, horrible crime. I remember I watched the video at the victim's impact statements, and I think it was his sister, her sister or aunt, that got on the witness stand, and they had a big glass jar, and she had these little glass stones in the shape of a heart. How many stab wounds was it?
114.
She dropped in 114 of these one at a time, and she said each one of these represents you stabbing our baby girl.
Wow.
114. Awesome. Very dramatic. And then the judge really ripped into him. And it was like, yeah, okay, you're going.
Hopefully, if we're lucky, that mom will get put in a cell with your girlfriend, Lori Vallow, who may be looking for a roommate.
Put her in the cell with Shabusiness.
She won't last long with Shabusiness around. There's no doubt about it. So hopefully, the family, though, in all seriousness, will get some sort of closure on this now that this case is wrapping up.
Yeah, it's never, ever closure, unfortunately. Even solving cold cases or whatever after 18 years, and it's never closure. It's just a different chapter. But somewhat of satisfaction that they know this person won't get to do it again than anyone else.
Let's move on, guys. Let's move to a place I've spent a lot of time at over the years, Rochester, New York. So we hear every day about people identifying as something different than they were biologically assigned with, if you will, at birth. And we have a unique one here. We have a man who is calling himself Baby Danielle. Mm. He's a 65-year-old New York man who repeatedly broke into a daycare center, stole diapers, and left money behind, along with bizarre notes for the staff that asked them to please, quote, play along while acting as if he were a baby girl. Hmm. The Monroe County Sheriff's Office arrested this guy, Daniel Sealer, again, age 65, after he allegedly broke into the Inspire Learning and Child Care Center in the town of Clarkson, which is about 20 miles west of Rochester. The center's director told the authorities that an employee found $120 and a note that asked if the daycare center had any adult-sized diapers and if employees could play along with him. This was reported by WHAM, WHAM, a radio station up in Rochester I knew well back in the day. The director said staff found a similar note accompanied with $200 a week later. This all inspired the daycare center to install a surveillance system and to alert police. And so, and most of this is happening in January and February of this year. And so on the morning of February 11th, a Saturday, the surveillance system alerted staff of activity at the daycare center. Upon arrival at the facility, the director said she found someone had rummaged through the diaper bin and left another note and more money. The note reportedly included sizes for pants, shoes, bras, and dresses, and indicated that the man wanted to play as a baby girl and referred to himself as, quote, Baby Danielle.
Oh, Lord.
The following Saturday, so now we're at Saturday, February 18th, staff were again alerted by the security system, and video showed a man trying to put multiple diapers together to make a big one. The director said the man ran into the bathroom during the incident, pulled down his pants, put the diaper on, then put his pants back on, and ran out of the child care center. The director called the police again and reported what she saw in the video. The incident also included this guy, Sealer, allegedly drinking half a bottle of baby formula, using a bib, and stealing a total of 3 diapers.
Wow.
You guys have been very patient with me on this story. I expected you to jump in soon.
I'm in for all.
Sealer was arrested and charged with burglary and petite larceny. He was released after an appearance ticket. Not positive what an appearance ticket is, but Woody Overton will tell us all about that in a minute.
Promise to appear just like a speeding ticket. When you sign it, you're not admitting guilt. It's just saying that you're going to show up for court. But I can't believe that they released this asshole because he's not going
to
stop.
Well, I guess somehow they've decided he isn't dangerous to anyone other than, you know, he's nuts, not. Because police said Sealer confessed to the string of incidents and argued that he was, quote, working through addiction.
Mm.
The daycare center owner said staff did not know Sealer, and that they have since boosted security measures at the facility.
I'm pretty sure I'd be taking my kid out of there.
Okay, so I've heard all kinds of craziness. Matt Walsh wrote a book about a kid who identifies as a walrus that sold billions of copies earlier this year. I've heard of of kids identifying as animals. We have a 65-year-old man who believes he's, yeah, or at least wants everybody to believe he is a baby, to the point where the guy's drinking formula.
To the point, and then when you're eating, I was thinking, Ben, he's taking those diapers and putting them together to make one big one. But I have to think he's freaking crazy, because why don't you just go to the store and buy some Depends? You know what I'm saying? But he wanted to be in there where it smells like babies and babies' toys, and he drinks some baby formula. Yeah, but hey, but at least he left money. Yeah.
He did leave money. I'm surprised he didn't leave a poo-poo diaper anywhere, because that would have, you know, if he's really trying to sell this.
That's the poo-pooing in a diaper and having it on you, he wants somebody to change it. But he wouldn't have left any poo-poo in there. He left the poo-poo in his diaper.
Yeah, that's
part of the, yeah, that's part,
oh,
of the,
trying to get some, well, maybe he was working toward,
right,
toward that when they sort of,
I wonder if he
nipped all this
when he did it and cleaned his own ass, if he used baby powder and all that shit, you know what I'm saying? Lift your legs up in the air like you do when you're a kid, you wipe the shit off. I bet he has baby wipes, a lot of baby powder, maybe even some Vaseline.
Dog.
Chat.
All I have to say about that is,
right, really takes all kinds to make the world go.
Yeah. And I'd just like to say that Pampers, if you would like a sponsor.
Or a Johnson baby powder.
Or Johnson baby powder.
What is weird is that if he was identifying as a female baby, what did he need bras for?
Probably wanted nursing bras.
What a sick.
So whip it out and he can get that milk when it had to be formula.
This guy here.
Whoa, boy. That's a really good story. I mean, what do you say about that?
Only in Rochester.
Holy shit.
Only in Rochester. I wanted to have a little intro music for everybody out there ready for today, but I just forgot to do it. So on this day in crime,
dun-dun-dun.
I know y'all been waiting on this, and we have some pretty good ones. Guys and listeners, did you know that on this day in 1971, Charles Manson and his three followers received the death penalty for seven murders committed in 1969? The state actually abolished the death penalty for a short time, so all these sentences were converted to life sentences. So Charles Manson. What y'all think about that?
Well, it's a skelter. I think he should have got.
Are you mad you didn't bring cupcakes today, since it was on this day in crime and we had Charles Manson? 1993, the bodies of Charlie Keever and Jonathan Sellers, and I actually remember this case, are found in San Diego near the Otay River. 8 years later, in 2001, a DNA database identified Scott Erickson as a suspect. And based on this DNA, they were able to charge and have him convicted of this crime. Now, he was already in prison for a rape committed 6 months after the boys, who were 9 and 13, were murdered in 1993. So in 1993, DNA was way in its infancy.
Yeah, like very beginning.
So he left a lot of that behind and ended up getting caught in 2001. Now in 1995, the body of a woman is found in Holt, California. She was inside a refrigerator and was killed by blunt force. Her identity is unknown and her murder remains unsolved.
Mm-hmm. Crazy.
To this day. So that is your day in crime for March 29th. There you go.
Unbelievable use of technology. That's great.
All right. Oh, that was awesome.
So, all right, y'all. Continuing along that, I want to do a segment which we've been thinking about for a while, and it is Stupid Crooks. Okay, Now this
dun, dun, dun.
Stupid Crooks. Well, I don't know how to turn that off.
Oh, my goodness.
Holy smokes.
Sorry.
This doesn't include any escaped convicts in Virginia, right? They're
right.
Not in this.
At the IHOP. All right. This crime occurred on July 21st, 2016. As a man receives, well, you know what? I'm going to say that for the end. Well, I guess I got to tell it. So a man earned himself a 3-year sentence for the vicious crime of giving someone else the wrong tattoo. Now, I've heard about people going in the tattoo parlors and getting what they wanted written in Chinese on them and shit, and a Chinese person saying, hey, that actually says, you know, eat a bag of dicks or whatever, and not my life is whatever. But this 21-year-old lady strolled into a tattoo shop with the hopes of getting a yin-yang symbol. What she got instead was a penis permanently drawn on her body, along with a popular word that begins with an F. Now, I've been asked to cut back on the F word, or I'm pretty sure it means fuck. So, while miscommunication often plays a part in tattoo mishaps, this is definitely not one of those situations. The woman described exactly what she was looking for, and the tattoo artist even drafted up a preview, showing it to her before drawing what was supposed to be that same image on her body. Simple, right?
Yeah.
You know, Mike? So, I got a couple of little things that this is my wedding ring that my wife and I have. They sketched out ahead of time and went in and got it done, right? That's what you did.
You have a yin yang on your ass too, don't you? I thought you did.
No, I have.
You mentioned that?
No. I don't.
Okay.
Thanks for looking at my ass. I appreciate it.
It's a shiner bottle.
Yeah.
Shiner bottle.
I have what's the only thing tattooed on my ass says exit only. All right. So it's simple, right? So she gets her tattoo done. You know, they wrap it up, put a little Vaseline on it or whatever, and send them on home. Well, she gets home. She's proud. She wants to see her shit, right? She looks under the bandage and she realized that the guy had given her something she didn't ask for. That's when she reported the incident to police. Y'all, he made a tattoo of a penis, right? And when she reported to police, if you find yourself asking why he would do such a thing, so did the cops. And they went and asked him. You know what he said? Just because. And so he got a 3-year sentence, and he will reportedly be placed in the center for mentally abnormal offenders.
Where was the tattoo? What part of her body?
It's on her back.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So she couldn't see it.
She couldn't see it. And so I'm sure she was face down, and he's putting it. I wonder how big it was. I mean, a yin-yang symbol. Maybe we should investigate that further. But anyway,
was there a picture of that? There was no photo.
Stupid. I'm sure if there was, you get censored like me on Facebook. Right? You can have a murder on Facebook, but you can't have a dick pic. But anyway, the 3-year sentence for tattooing a penis on a woman who asked for a yin yang sign. That is today's Stupid Crooks segment. Hey, just because.
Just because.
Definitely deserves to be in the Stupid Crooks. I would love to see what she did to try and alter that, right? To turn it into something else.
I was thinking about that earlier when I was reading this, and they have specialists, right, who can turn pretty much any tattoo into anything. Maybe
a long-necked dinosaur or something?
A giraffe. Or maybe she'll get maybe it'll look like a piece of flat Wrigley's bubble gum on top and then some hairy bubble gum on the bottom. some hairy bubble gum. All right.
Hey, guys.
I quit. All right.
By popular demand.
Yes.
Especially after the way we started this episode, we need a game.
Yes.
We need a game. And I was inspired last week when we were doing the story about the escaped convicts and we started talking about Andy Dufresne and right. Shawshank, and everyone seemed to know yes. an awful lot about Shawshank.
Yes.
And so I have a Shawshank trivia game prepared for you, guys.
You need to download this so we can hit the buzzer at the same time.
Okay. No, no, this will not require a buzzer, but this will require a pen.
All right. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
And that's Jim's name. Take this. And there are
that's
10.
One way to win.
there are 10 questions, most of which have A, B, C, and D as choices, or true or false. And so it'll be pretty easy for you guys to write down, and then we'll go over them at the end.
All right.
Okay. No peeking, Jimmy.
No peeking.
I won't look.
Okay, so question number one. Two actors actually turned down the role of Andy Dufresne prior to Tim Robbins being offered the role. Were those two actors A, Tom Hanks and Nicolas Cage, B, Kevin Costner and Jeff Bridges, C, Tom Hanks and Kevin Costner, or D, Kevin Hart and Chris Tucker? Right. Question two. Tom Hanks had a conflict and could not take on the role of Andy Dufresne because of what other movie he was filming? A, was it Sleepless in Seattle? B, was it Philadelphia? C, was it Forrest Gump? D, was it Saving Private Ryan? Here's a little clue with that one. The film Hanks actually ended up doing beat out Shawshank for Best Picture.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't give a clue. I already knew it.
Okay. Three, finish this quote. And this is a quote that Andy Dufresne supposedly said to his wife during the confrontation they had when he caught her with another man. I'll see you in hell before I see you in blank. Is blank A, Reno? B, Las Vegas? C, New York? Or D, Boston? I'll see you in hell before I see you in blank. Question four, what was Tim Robbins' call sign in the original Top Gun movie? Was he A, Merlin, B, Jester, C, Hollywood, or D, Wolfman? Question five, Brooks, who was played by James Whitmore, kept a pet bird. What was the bird's name? A, Polly, B, Petey, C, Red, or D, Jake? What was the name of Brooks's bird? Question six. What girl did Andy get for his 10th anniversary from Red? Was it A, Rita Hayworth, B, Lana Turner, C, Marilyn Monroe, or D, Jane Russell? Okay, seven's a little bit more difficult. So you're going to write four names down, and then you're going to write four other names down and match them. So we're matching the actor to the character they played. So the four actor names are A, Clancy Brown, B, Morgan Freeman, C.
Hold on a second. So I got to write all these down?
Yes.
I'm just putting first names.
Clancy Brown, Morgan Freeman, C is James Whitmore, D, actually a buddy of mine from L.A., Gil Bellows is D. The characters are A, Brooks Hatlin, B, Tommy. He's never given a last name in the movie. C, Captain Hadley. And D, Ellis Boyd Redding. So match the name on the left, the actor's name, to the role on the right. Give you guys a few seconds to do that. Woody's fast today. Come on, Jim.
By far the best prison movie of all time.
Okay, I mean, moving
the
on.
The most number realistic. Eight.
True or false? Shawshank was a real prison. Nine. What state was Shawshank located in? Was it A, New Hampshire, B, Massachusetts, C, Rhode Island, or D, Maine? Question 10. What was the warden's name? Was it A, Warden Pope, B, Warden Norton, C, Warden Dollison, or D, Warden Hazen? A, Warden Pope, B, Warden Norton, C, Warden Dollison, D, Warden Hazen.
All right, let's do it.
If you guys are tied, I have a bonus question at the end.
I don't think that's
so. Let's just tally who's got them right. The two actors who turned down the role of Andy Dufresne prior to Tim Robbins accepting it were?
C.
Tom Hanks and Kevin Costner. Correct. Question two. Tom Hanks had a conflict and could not take on the role because of what movie?
B.
D.
The correct answer is C, Forrest Gump, which would later win the Academy Award for Best Picture over Shawshank Redemption. So you both got it wrong. You both still have one. Finish the quote. I'll see you in hell before I see you in?
D.
D.
They both say Boston. The correct answer is A, Reno. You're both still tied at one. What was Tim Robbins' call sign in the original Top Gun movie?
A.
Merlin.
Correct. Both times. It was Merlin. You guys are tied at two.
Jim was cheating.
I was not.
Brooks, played by James Whitmore, kept the pet bird. What was the bird's name?
D.
B.
D. Jake. Also the name of my little pooch, Jake. Correct. So you both have three now.
No, he missed it. He said B.
No, I said B.
I thought you said D.
He's up by one.
Okay, so it's 3-2. Sorry.
I don't do names, but we're okay. Good.
What girl did Andy get for his 10th anniversary from Red?
D.
You know, I should have not went with
Raquel A. Welch was not an option, but he had Raquel at one point.
I went with C, but I know that was too late.
What do you mean it was too late?
Because the stars got more famous as went on, and he was only on 10 years. Marilyn Monroe probably was in diapers, but I went with C.
You were correct.
Sorry there, Jim. Boom.
So it was Marilyn Monroe.
Dang. So we're tied back.
So it's tied 3-3. Okay, so match the actor to the character they played. A, Clancy Brown.
I did Tommy. I don't know.
I also did Tommy.
That would be incorrect.
All right, so we're still tied.
Morgan Freeman.
Brooks.
I did Ellis Redding.
His name was Red, Woody.
Yes.
Oh, that's right.
Ellis Boyd Redding.
All right.
James Whitmore.
I did Captain Whatever.
He was Brooks.
All right.
And
James
my
Whitmore.
Pal Gil
wait,
Bellows.
Can I answer? Okay. I did Brooks.
Oh, didn't we just say that?
Sorry, yeah. So
well,
I'm
you
up
said
two.
That before. Yeah, you got two there.
Yep. And then the last one.
Gil Bellows was Tommy.
And what did you have that one right also?
No, I missed that one. I had Captain H.
All right. So the only saving grace I have left is if I get all three of these correct and Jim gets one of them wrong or we tie. Go ahead. Number eight.
Yeah. A little bewildered as to how You screwed that one up, Woody. But number eight.
I can't do names. I told you that.
Shawshank was a real prison. True or false?
I said false.
False.
That is correct. It was not a real prison. It's false. What state was Shawshank located in?
B.
I went with B also.
It was D, Maine. It was located in Portland, Maine.
And no way I can catch him now. Yeah.
What was the warden's name?
B.
B is correct. Warden Norton. Did you have that one, Woody?
I'm not even. It's like,
like a toilet flushing.
It's like Texas Hold'em. If I'm a fold, I'm not showing you my hands.
Warden Norton. By the way, the other warden names, Warden Pope was from Prison Break. C. Warden Dollison was from Escape from Alcatraz.
Prison Break was a great show.
Warden Hazen was from The Longest Yard.
Warden Burl Kane used to be from Angola. Y'all go listen to Bloody Angola. If you like whoever was mailing the posters to Andy Dufresne in prison, you have your own small business and you don't want to go to the post office anymore, USPS or UPS or anybody else, go to stamps.com, use code RLRC, get a 4-month free trial discount on your stamps. And hey, how much money and time will you save on not having to drive when they'll pick all that stuff up
lots
at your house?
And lots and lots. Hey, one last bit of trivia, which was going to be my bonus question. Where was Shawshank filmed? A, California, B, Maine, C, Ohio, Louisiana.
In America.
Maine.
Definitely wasn't Louisiana.
It was actually filmed at the Ohio State Reformatory in Mansfield, Ohio.
And if you
guys got to work on your Shawshank.
If you are selling inmate goods, and since you can't go to the post office, et cetera, you can probably go to stamps.com and enter code RLRC. Y'all save you time and money. And if you're locked down, you probably can't get drizzly inside the big house. But you might do stamps.com.
Hey, and you get a 4-week free trial. You get a free scale.
And discount on stamps and everything else.
Yeah, and you get a free
scale. No commitment. And hey, you know what? I hate going to the post office, period. Or USPS or whatever. So y'all give these folks a shot. Tell them, use the code so you can get all your discounts.
Yep.
All right. And y'all, we ran a little long today, but it was a good show. Again, I know my heart goes out to the officers' families, to the victims of the school shooting. Prayers, whatever deity you believe in, offer something up for everybody that loved and knew these people.
Hey, share it, the podcast. Tell all your friends. Check out the Facebook if you hadn't done so already. Real Life, Real Crime Daily. And until next time, I'm Jim Chapman.
I'm Woody Overton.
And I'm Mike Agavino.
For Real Life, Real Crime Daily. Peace.
Shabusiness.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.